Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of this show, recognize they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person, share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength, capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulder, deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint on Late Night Poets Blog Talk Radio. After midnight, although not for me, it's still 9:30 here. We are a group on allpoetry.com, and you don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can comment in the chat and read the poems along with us. I'm Faziana, and my co-host Babbler is away today, having some fun. So today I am joined by our wonderful Pam Ray. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Faisy. How's it going?
Pretty good. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely. It's been a while since I've called an after midnight show where I didn't have to dial the host number. So I started dialing the host number, and then I was like, wait, that's not your job tonight, Pam.
Well, we almost needed you to because I kept logging into the wrong account because I have a few that I have to log into. So I'm doing it. And I'm like, why isn't my show here? Oh, because it's the wrong account.
I have had that exact same thing happen to me. Yep, exactly. So, yeah, but great lineup of poetry tonight. Awesome prompts that you chose. Very cool.
Thank you. I was watching the show, Fleischman is in Trouble, and as I'm listening to the narration of the TV show, I was thinking, this has to be a book. Like, the narration is too good. This must be a book. And I looked it up, and of course it is. So the book is by Taffy Brodser Ackner, and I haven't read the book yet, but I'm definitely going to because I loved the show. The first couple episodes, I was a little bit iffy. The online dating stuff, I mean, I'm not a prude, but I was like, is this whole thing just going to be like random internet sex? But then it ended up being so deep. It was quite the thinking show if you're, you know, about to turn 40 having a midlife crisis, such as myself. So.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I'm not quite, but it was definitely hit me in the feels for New Year's, I have to say. It caught me right at that vulnerable time of, oh, my God, what am I doing with my life? It struck a chord.
It sounds like a great show and a book. I'll have to definitely check them out.
It took me by surprise. It really did. It was not what I thought it was at first. And it's quite dark, but not in a violent way, just in a, you know, self-examining kind of way.
A lightly sad type way?
Yes.
Yeah.
But just be prepared to have some feelings. That's all.
Yeah, I need to, I'm a little late on having my midlife crisis because right around the time that I was supposed to be midlife and having the crisis, I was like, just had my fourth child. So I figure it's about time I had one, and I'm imagining involving like, you know, a man with ripped abs and a motorcycle or something like that.
You know, that would be fun. It's not how it goes for them in the show, but that would be fun. I mean, I guess there was a woman with ripped abs and possibly a motor. You know what? It did happen. Just briefly, no spoilers.
Too funny.
So I used two quotes from the book / show. I'm pretty sure they're in both. The first one is, how could you be this far along in life and still so unsettled? How could you know so much and still be this baffled by it all? Was this what enlightenment felt like, an understanding that life is a cancer that metastasizes so slowly you only have a vague and intermittent sense of your dying, that the dying is happening slowly enough that you get used to it? Or maybe that wasn't life. Maybe that was just middle age. And that quote is by Taffy Brodser Ackner in Fleischman in Trouble. And I'm pretty sure the character Libby is the one who says it, because she usually says all the best parts. I love Libby. So let's jump into that. I'm going to read our first entry, which is by Daniel DeShino. Dan is lovely and always writes for my contests when he gets the chance. Okay, here we go. Nursing Home by Daniel DeShino. The mischievous animal eventually finds the weakness in its cage, and sometimes it just waits for rust and rot. I have gathered internal scars as a blue whale in a plankton field, and blood lays stagnant in the bruised and battered. Death, the caged animal only. Animals sorry, the caged animals only escape. Faith in faith. The only world outside. End poem. Pam, why don't you start us on the comments?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, great read there. Just an amazing write by Daniel. Of course, his writes are always amazing. I like that this one, he chose to do a brevity, which I feel has a lot of impact. Even the title choice, nursing home, you know, and the idea of looking at the nursing home or looking at the end of life and the body and the mind as a prison. I really like this all the way through, but the part that struck me the most was the beginning. The mischievous animal eventually finds the weakness in its cage, and sometimes it just waits for rust and rot. I feel like that there's that idea of two different people, those who find themselves in a cage, a metaphorical cage, a difficult time in life, and find that way to get out of it, and those who just, you know, wait around hoping that something will happen. I really like also the mention of the internal scars as a blue whale in a plankton field. I mean, my goodness, you can just imagine, because, you know, plankton is so tiny, but, you know, the when the whales swallow it down, there's like just millions of it. And you think of that metaphor as all the hurt and the pain that you're swallowing in by just accepting and waiting around for that cage to rust and rot. So excellent write and very well done.
Yes, it's a great brevity. He usually writes longer pieces, and I enjoy both styles. I think he's very direct here and that it works well for this instance. I originally thought of the cage as the body. The body is the cage, and our spirit or mind or whatever us is just waiting for this body to, you know, disappear. There's this song by the band Mother Mother, which probably nobody knows except for me because they're local. But it's like, take my hands, take them. And it's like, it talks about like all the different body parts, and it's like, I don't need this, it hurts, I don't need this, it's clumsy, or like whatever. And it's just like, it goes through all the body parts, like just take it all away. It's like, I'm so tired of this body. I can't remember all the words, but it's like, get rid of the body. I want to move on to the next stage. So I was thinking of the cage as that, but I actually really like what you said about the cage, Pam. So I'm going to take back my initial thought and agree with you for the cage. And I like the plankton part on multiple levels. So on the one hand, you're thinking about the plankton that is waiting for its cage to fall apart or burp, because then, you know, maybe they'll be able to escape because they're swallowed alive. But on the other hand, maybe as the whale has internal scars, because swallowing those creatures whole, they are fighting their way out from the inside. You are getting attacked from the inside. And yes, they're tiny, but there are so many of them. And what you are consuming is hurting you. And maybe what we consume in life, not food-wise, but like the all of the things that we put ourselves through ends up scarring us internally. So with the choices that we make, as much as they are necessary for survival, kind of beat us up. Death is the only escape from the cage. Thank you. I'm just thinking out loud.
Yeah, well, and you know, it's funny because after you mentioned the idea of the body being the cage, I actually thought, you know what, that makes a lot of sense. So I really feel like that metaphor works on both levels, because I did like what you had to say and had to agree that it makes sense that oftentimes, especially as we age, you know, our body feels more like a cage, an imprisonment. So very cool.
Now I'm thinking about another song. I can't remember who the band is, but it's like, my body is a cage that keeps
me. Oh, my gosh, I love that song.
With the one I love.
Oh, it's
Arcade Fire, maybe?
It's Leonard Cohen.
Oh, is it?
That song. Yeah.
Ah, there we go.
Right? No, Peter Gabriel. It's either Leonard Cohen or Peter Gabriel. It's one of the two. I want to say, geez, I said Leonard Cohen and then I questioned myself. I think I wrote a poem to that or something, or I ran a contest for it because I definitely recognize it.
I'm sure that I learned it from a cover. Okay, you're right. It was Peter Gabriel who did it first. But I was also right about Arcade Fire because they did a cover of it that was like
remix
kind of version. Yeah. Okay, so that's the version I know. It was the cover.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, it sounds a little bit too like weirdly, not quite punk, but like definitely not like classic Peter Gabriel.
But yeah, I had actually, Robert had ran a contest years ago using that song as a prompt. With the Peter Gabriel version. So that's why, of course, I'm like, oh, yeah, Peter Gabriel. Of course, I said first Leonard Cohen.
My music knowledge is usually entirely from the soundtracks of, like, TV shows or movies or something that I hear it kind of abstractly, and I'm like, oh, what's that? And I look it up.
Right?
I don't have the widest variety of music knowledge, or my husband will listen to things and I pick up on his stuff. Anyhow, our next poem is by Ulo the Dawn, and I'm going to get you to read that, Pam, if you will.
Absolutely. I would be happy to. Life by Msi Ulo the Dawn. The end is nothing but the beginning. When time mellowed on my mind, it captured the reality thus wise defined. Nothing but a moon in sight, and have you seen how life unfolds into the sentence of the heart of its bolts? Used to be in the scene of what reality is onward beckoning. It is so slow, double the hall, suddenly so spin. Life in the wind, clue, the dedication of its shoe. It walks so slow, but if we speed it up, it floats. So what are we saying then? Is life something of the reality? Nothing is as it seems. End poem.
Great read, Pam. An interesting poem. It happens in like a dialogue going back and forth. I guess it's not quotation marks. It's asterisks. It's really small on my screen, but there's some kind of... Oh, no, it's apostrophes. But it's like it's being said. And there's some really interesting punctuation throughout. Upside-down question marks after reality, which really makes it feel like a surreal, like, anti-reality going on. With the upside down question. Interesting punctuation. And also, as usual for Msi Ulo the Dawn, there's things that are capitalized for emphasis. For example, in sight, S-I-G is lowercase, H-T is capitalized, and then N right after that is lowercase. So I'm not quite sure how to interpret that, but I feel like there's an emphasis on that word where it's supposed to be striking us. Really interesting. There's always clues within his writing that I feel like I'm solving a mystery in an escape room looking for subtext, because I think there are layers to it. What did you think, Pam?
You know what? I like how you compare... trying to, dissect his poetry into, solving a puzzle. I was just looking up exactly what the upside down question mark is, and apparently it's used in Spanish. In Spanish, the upside-down question mark is used in the beginning of all questions and interrogative clauses. For example, ¿cómo te llamas? And so that's interesting. I did not know that, but yeah, I like how he plays with punctuation and has a creativity to it. And, you know, like, as you said, he uses capitalization to really emphasize certain parts. And even like the title and the word life, how it becomes part of the general message of the rite with separating the L-I-E, you know, so that it spells the word lie. Creative rite, cleverly done. I really thought that this focused on the idea of the blurred lines between the beginning and the end and reality and fiction and how sometimes it's difficult to tell them apart. Beautifully written and very well done.
Yes, there's a lot of intricate work put into there. And thank you for looking at the punctuation because I was not familiar with that. I guess I need to learn some Spanish.
Yeah, probably me too.
Our next poem is Numb by My Angels 3. I don't feel anymore. I just think thoughts. I don't care anymore. I press play and record. I'm not a freak anymore. I'm differently normal. I'm not hurt anymore. They're not able. I won't hide anymore. Burst that bubble. I'm not lost anymore. I'm perfectly troubled. I don't dream anymore. Keeps me awake. I don't need anymore. Nothing left to take. I'm not myself anymore. They are more like me. I'm not trying anymore. You are not like me. I can't lay here anymore. This is their bed. I won't speak anymore. Everything is said. I'm not here anymore. I'm outside, inside. I'm not going anymore. It's too far to find. I won't cry anymore. This gave me the drug. They gave me the drugs. I'm not down anymore. They are wrongly up. I won't laugh anymore. They took all the funny. I don't stand anymore. Freedom is fallacy. I won't fight anymore. They took away my fists. I won't take flight anymore. I'm stable and hooked. I'm not young anymore. They keep on reminding. I'm not cool anymore. I'm stuck, undecided. I'm not reaching anymore. My hands have been tied. I'm not teaching anymore. They're all out of their minds. It's not me anymore. Versions of immersion. It's not them anymore. Versions of divergence. I can't see you anymore. They told me your name. I won't listen anymore. I'm numb to the pain. I can't shine anymore. They made me like rain. I won't rise anymore. I'm numb to the pain. I can't live anymore. They tell me I'm saved. I won't lie anymore. I'm numb to the pain. End poem. Pam, can you start us off?
Oh, absolutely. Wonderful read there, Faisy. I'm always impressed by My Angel 3's writing. It has a strong emotional impact. I like that she chose to do this in that first-person narrative of I, and over and over again, to where you kind of feel the sadness, feel the madness within it. I like how even the one-word title has a lot of impact, numb. The idea of losing one's emotions, losing the ability to feel anything, this has the feeling of somebody who's in a mental ward, you know, and especially with lines like, I won't cry anymore, they gave me the drugs, I'm not down anymore, they are wrongly up. I won't fight anymore. They took away my fists. I won't take flight anymore. I'm stable and hooked. It actually kind of makes me think of A Clockwork Orange, and the storyline in there and the idea, you know, and it makes me think of the idea of taking away free will or the idea of somebody who suffers from depression. You know, I think there's many thoughts you can think on this with the idea of somebody who has been given medication, who has been taken away, their free will has been taken away, their ability to feel has been taken away, and it almost feels like their humanity has been taken away. I really like, I can't see you anymore, they told me your name, I won't listen anymore, I'm numb to the pain, I can't shine anymore, they made me like rain, I won't rise anymore, I'm numb to the pain. A wonderful use of repetition that really has an impact. So excellent write and very well done.
I agree with you that the repetition has an impact. With any more, it reminds you that it used to be different. It's not just that this person doesn't feel. It's that this person doesn't feel anymore. There used to be feeling. There used to be dreams. There was hiding. They felt like a freak. Any of the things that they're saying in those first sentences that end in anymore used to be true, but aren't now. And I think that makes a big impact when you're thinking about the fact that those things were theirs and not now. I especially liked the part that's called that says, I'm not here anymore. I'm outside, inside. Because to me, that talks about disassociation. I'm outside, inside. I'm not here. It's that feeling of you're kind of like outside of your body. Your insides are on your outsides. You're watching from the outside, not really experiencing things yourself, and that's part of the numbness. I thought that was cleverly done. I think that depression in general does tend to make you feel numb. If people associate it with being sad, but it's not actual sadness. It's beyond sad. It's when you can't even feel the sad that it gets really scary. And then the medication can sometimes add to the numbness, you know, depending on the meds and what's going on. But I've definitely had that too, where it takes away the downs, but it also takes away the ups. And it goes through that. It's I'm not down anymore, but also is not, where is it now? I won't laugh anymore. It takes away the crying, but it also takes away the laughing, because you're always in that middle. And the way that it's describing that, it kind of makes me think of a flat-lined heart monitor. It doesn't go up and down. It's just flat. And so it's numb. And it's almost like you're dead, because you're nothing. You're just in between the whole time. So this is a really painful poem to read in that it's emotional and emotive, but it's well done. I think that it captures that feeling, and the being stuck in the same that thing of being stuck in what feels like the same all the time. I think the fact that it's repetitious gets at that feeling of it just lasts, and it's unchanged. That's their experience. It goes on the same. Well done, My Angels 3. So, Pam, I'm going to put one up for you by Damn It Dave.
All right. Very cool. All right, this is Adulthood, Where Dreams Go to Die by Damn It Dave. And it goes like this. Welcome to adulthood, or as I like to call it, the place where childhood dreams go to die. It's amazing how work and family create such a routine that life goes by while we're busy making plans to enjoy it. One day we're in primary school, the next we're in college. In the blink of an eye, we're married with children, pulling down 40-plus hours a week to make ends meet, and all of the dreams of our youth turn from sunshine into shadow. I used to wonder why old people wailed and moaned in nursing homes. Now I know it's not from pain, sickness, or the fear of death. It's from the fantasies never lived and the regrets that sit like leaden weights over dreams that sailed into the sunset without us. End poem.
Well read, Pam. And I think this is really strong, especially at the end there, that it's the idea of the fantasies that are lost that hurts even more than the physical pain when you're dying and you realize what you never did, that you've given up those dreams, that you projected yourself into the future thinking this was what the future was going to be, and to realize that that's no longer possible or plausible is the pain of adulthood. Because when you're young, there's so much possibility. Where is it now? It talks about how fast things go. In the blink of an eye, this happens. Now, sometimes your problem is like with me, in the blink of an eye, it didn't happen. Like, what? How did my eyes blink and life is over and I didn't do those things? But different things for different people and what they didn't do. And it's that idea of what you didn't do that strikes you. I messed up by posting this one so early, actually, because it's to the second prompt. So I meant to save this for later. So the second prompt was, it was maybe the worst insult of adulthood that even your silly, non-life-threatening, non-based desires got swallowed up by routine and maturity and edged out of your life for good. Which, like the first prompt is by Taffy Brosser Eckner, Fleischman is in trouble. And I think that he captured the prompt with this poem. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree. It was a wonderful capturing of the prompts. Great imagery and metaphors throughout. I, too, I was really impressed with this one, and especially as you were mentioning the ending with the thought of, you know, the realization that what brings the most the wails and the moans is, you know, not the pain, the sickness, or the fear of death, but the realization, the regrets of what you did not get to do, what you did not get to accomplish. And I like that he takes us through life and the idea of how quickly adulthood comes to us. And the years pass, especially when you're focused on, you know, whatever it is you're doing, working, family, you know, whatever your life is. And then you look back and realize, you know, there's more of your life behind you than there is ahead of you. So really great lines all the way through. But, yeah, it was definitely those last four stanzas that really made an impact with me. So excellent write and very well done.
The next poem is by Maharsalani, 1848. There is pervasive sadness setting in when looking out from these two open eyes at setting suns in technicolor skies or blown glass ornaments that dangle thin and glittering against the birch's skin. There is an aura of a dread surmise, of blueness to the hues that underlies the views as wistful as a formless gin. My burdened backpack pulls the shoulder so. It sends Morse messages in lines of pain that there are places I will never go and prospects I will never see again. I cannot retrace youth, though now I know how brief our passages through this terrain. End poem. Well, I really liked the way that this was described, especially the Morse messages in lines of pain. Your body responding to the things that you're going through all of the burdens that you carry, just warning you about those paths you didn't take. I'm thinking about like those lines of pain that happen in your muscles go, and you can actually feel that actually straight line of it, and it's like a map. That's really an interesting way of putting it. And not just places you will never go, the prospects you will never see again. It's having the options, and that's something that they really emphasized on the show. Libby's character kept saying, there's no more choices. The choices have all been made. And, you know, the frustrating part for her is that she made the right choices, and she looks back and she's like, I would make the same choices again, but they were choices, and now I don't have an option. This is the only thing that I can do, and I want to believe that there's still choices. And that idea of not having prospects anymore, of not having possibilities, even if you're already where you want to be, not having the choice is tough. I liked the idea of the djinn too, the wistful and formless as a djinn. That's a really cool way of putting it. Now, my understanding of djinn is that they are sort of like genies, but usually evil genies in Middle Eastern mythology. I could be wrong about this. And I'm picturing like the wispy kind of magicalness of the genie. And the Christmas tree, well, it might not be Christmas tree, but when it's talking about the glass orbs against the birch's skin, I'm picturing that it's a decorated tree, and that it, as much as it's adorned, beautiful, it's basically dead, and it's slowly drying out, and as are we. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really like this, and I too had focused in on the use of the word djinn, although I think in part it was for the rhyme, but it worked on a dual level. It worked well for the rhyme that she was using, but it also worked well because I think it is supposed to be I could be wrong, but yeah, I think it is supposed to be a slightly more like, you know, if not necessarily evil, more mischievous than what we think of it as a genie. It says, I was looking it up, in Arabian and Muslim mythology, a jinn is an intelligent spirit of lower rank than the angels, able to appear in human and animal forms and to possess humans. So, but yeah, I really liked the imagery in this. It was very captivating. I like how you brought up the part about the feeling, the pain, with the, and it sends Morse messages in lines of pain that there are places I will never go. This actually made me think about the poem by Robert Frost about the roads divided and trying to decide which one to take. It makes me think of an after poem, like the idea of somebody who chose which road they were going to take and then is looking back and wondering if they made the right choice. You know, I like how this speaks on the idea of life moving forward and the idea that we can't go back to travel those same roads. Some of my favorite imagery in this was at setting suns in technicolor skies or blown glass ornaments that dangle thin and glittering against the birch's skin. There's an aura of a dread surmise. Like everything can look beautiful and flashy, but they can still feel like there's something missing. So wonderful lines and very well done.
That was a great comment, Pam. Thank you for that. Can you please read the poem by S. Sharp?
I would be happy to. All right. This is Printing Success in 3D by S. Sharp, and it goes like this. Tunneling mountains with a spoon, a half century, paving roads to a dead end. The lampshade shuckled to the left, shining light to the right, an avalanche of gumption. Stepping by a trip, Starbucks, potential becomes a cold brew of none of this and less of that, served with a less than sincere thank you. Stopping to view the sunshine dropped from the sky, it always remains suspended just above my head, but I accept it. I'm even thankful for the savings on sunscreen. Life takes an Uber to the neighbor's house to ask for a cup of sugar. Passivity melts snowmen on Pop-Tarts, calls it icing, but really it just ices down all the pain that ails me. I want to untwist moonbeams and candy cane, but instead I am sucking the blood out of them, leaving them plain white like the walls I am staring at. Now, though, like so many others, I print success in plastic on a 3D printer and post pictures of it on Instagram or Facebook, still waiting on the likes. End poem.
Oh, I love so many bits of this. I don't even know where to start. So the part about potential becomes a cold brew of none of this and less of that, I absolutely love the wording of that. And served with a less than sincere thank you. And I'm kind of a weird person where I don't like politeness because it's usually fake. And if I say thank you, it's because I really, really mean thank you. I don't like the obligation to say thank you at all times. I think that it's better if it means something. And that fakeness of the thank you just in a way hits more. I don't know, but I liked that part. So then the other part that I was really excited about was life takes an Uber to the neighbor's house to ask for a cup of sugar. It's like there's such a distance in between us now, and it's not a physical distance, but that you're not connected to your community. It's not that thing where you just kind of walk across your lawn and there it is, because the next closest person who you actually talk to is probably an Uber away, and then you'll probably have the kind of like fake small talk with your Uber driver as you go over to do it and have that insincere interaction that they're talking about earlier. Then the way that it words it with snowmen on Pop-Tarts calls it icing, but really it just ices down all the pain. Like, that is a really interesting way of putting it. So cool. Then the candy canes and that urge to untwist it, but you just kind of suck the life out of it instead of, you know, finding all of the red, the juicy mint or cherry part of it, you end up being left with the blandness. And in the end, that's all you have is the plain part. And the walls, I really hate white walls. I think it's because I've spent a lot of time in hospitals, but I have anxiety around blank walls. I tend to over-decorate in a kind of like ugly way because I can't handle a blank wall. And I connect to this part of like the, it's plain and white and so is everything that I'm just looking at, and it's just drained of all life. Then the 3D printer part is so great because it works on multiple levels. I print success in plastic. So on the one hand, plastic can sometimes refer to paying with debit or credit. So printing success in plastic is like, I made a lot of money. Look at the things I'm buying. I'm successful. But it doesn't really feel successful because what have you done with your life other than make money? Or printing in plastic as in, you know, that, again, the fakeness, the plastic smile, the put on airs. And then 3D printer, like the actual literal 3D printer, where you're making copies of things. I use a 3D printer. I do think it's cool, but it makes me think about how my husband plays this game Warhammer, and you can pay a stupid amount to buy the little parts, and then you build them and paint them and all the things. If you do it the official way, it's way more expensive. Or you can kind of do the knockoff version that you print yourself. But it's not the same because you've kind of cheated. You didn't get the real thing. You haven't gone through the process. It's not legit. And sometimes you can use it in the game. And if you're at like a tournament or something, it's not accepted. And I feel like the 3D printer version is the knockoff. It's going to be not quite the same as if you legitimately did something. Instead of carving something with wood in your own hands, you're getting the computer to do it for you. And I think that could be symbolic of a lot of things that we do in many ways. And then the idea of posting it on Instagram or Facebook because, you know, nothing we do is happening unless someone else sees it and approves of it. Still waiting on the likes, you're creating this life, 3D printing it, just so you can have the appearance of accomplishing something. I think this says a lot. It's a fairly short poem, but there's so much in it. Well done, Scott. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I really liked your in-depth analysis of it and how there's a lot to read into it. You know, especially in that part about the 3D printer. You know, I thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors, and it was an excellent write to me that, you know, spoke on the idea of being too busy sharing posts and pictures off of the internet to truly live life to the fullest. And great writing all the way through. I was really intrigued with the imagery of the analysis and imagery of passivity melts no man on Pop-Tarts, calls it icing, but really it just ices down all the pains that all me. You know, the idea of just trying to cover things up. I also like the reference to the Starbucks cold brew. I thought that was quite clever. An avalanche of gumption, stopped by a trip to Starbucks, potential becomes a cold brew of none of this and less of that, served with a less than sincere thank you. And that's very true. But I mean, I know there are people who, when they say thank you, they're sincere. When they give a compliment, they're sincere. You know, oftentimes it doesn't feel like it. But when it speaks on the idea of none of this and less of that, it makes me think of the thought that we realize as we get older, we don't need all those bunch of add-ons. Like you were talking about the money and how, you know, the credit card, and yeah, you got a lot of money, but what else do you have? And that's kind of like what that makes me think of in a way is, you know, it's those add-ons into the cold brew coffee, the extra syrup, the extra, you know, whipped cream, you know, which are nice, but they're really just covering up the important parts of life, the simple pleasures of a life. You know, just a really wonderful, thought-provoking lines all the way through, and very well done.
Yes, it was a whole bunch of little things that I enjoyed, and I feel like I wanna have him expand on that and just go into it, because I don't know, something about that one really caught me. Every once in a while, it's just like, I don't know if I'm in the right mood to read that poem or what, but it clicked. Now, this next one is called Truth, and it's by Opti. How could you be you? How could you have found so much beyond the beyond that you just knew? Enlightenment is not but a word to encapsulate nothingness. Find it and place it where it wants to be, the part of you, the part of me that makes us free. End poem. Pam, will you start the comments, please?
Absolutely. Great read there, Faisy. This is an excellent brevity. I thought it had a thoughtful and intriguing lines, that it spoke on the idea of finding the completeness of self, you know, finding the part of yourself that makes you feel complete, makes you feel the person you want to be. I really always like questions in poetry, and I like that it starts out with the question, how could you? And I like how they have created with the dots, you know, that space, which you read perfectly, creating the pauses in just the right places, and how there is that pause and that question and answer. How could you be you? How could you have found so much beyond the beyond that you just knew enlightenment is not? And I like how this speaks on not only the idea of finding your complete self, but being true to yourself and saying, you know what, this might be other people's idea of enlightenment, but it is not mine, and so therefore I'm going to go search for my own. And so excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Pam, and I agree with you that those dot, dot, dots were really integral to the poem, especially because Opti doesn't use line breaks as pauses, it seems. Like, they're always in the middle of a sentence. And, I mean, maybe I am supposed to break at those points, but the way that the dot, dot, dots are does leave you time to think, and I think that those times are in important places. How could you, being a question, of course, it makes sense to have space after that, and then the reader is wondering, how could they what? And then be, so you're expecting them to say, like, be a jerk, be selfish, be whatever, and then it's you. How could you be you? And then you have to wonder, how could they be themselves? Is this person, the writer, having trouble being themselves? Are they unclear how the person could be the way they are? Because it asks so many questions. If you actually give yourself time to think at the dot, 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 there's so much to wonder about. And I like wondering when I'm reading. Sometimes I like time to just go off into my own little world. And it's funny because things that are short sometimes take me a very long time to read because they spark thoughts. And things that are very long, sometimes I can read quickly because it's you know, action-packed and it just lets you read along with it. But I feel like this piece, I would naturally pause and wonder about things. I like doing that. So thank you, Opti.
Me too. It is nice when the poetry allows you to do that.
Even though Babbler couldn't be here today, She did record a SoundCloud of her poem, so I'm going to play her SoundCloud.
Horizon lines. I never know what to say to someone seeking comfort. The chamomile words steep in my throat, stopping short of the tongue. They drown, arms hollow, unmoving, uncertain. Do you want to be touched? Those words, too, are stillborn. Loss is the highest form of love, and the lowest, where the sky meets the sea, both, neither. I haven't cried in over a year. Tears flow on command. A twist of the face easily pops the cork on pseudo-heartbreak or pink champagne nostalgia. But I haven't guzzled the whole bottle, bubbles foaming up into shoulders, mouth and nose and eyes, leaking from every orifice until Letha submerges me in profoundly cerulean corners of my ache. That kind of cry. Another loss. An empty bottle. What happens after death? A sand castle eaten by the sea, swept back into grains that could be anything. No memory that it once was, but it was, just the same. Gin drops on my cheek, smeared there by yours, are martini dry. Hands search for something in my shoulders, near my spine pressed between my ribs, and I cannot tell if you found it. I want to be touched. I want to be drunk. End poem.
So I read this last night, not even realizing that it was going to be for tonight's show, and I cried. I felt this one so deeply, and it might be partly because of my own issues, and it might be partly because of knowing Babbler's story, or at least thinking I do, based on her other poems and things she said on the show, that this just hit me so deeply. In the beginning, I thought it was kind of playful with the chamomile words steep in my throat, because chamomile tea would be something that steeps, and the idea of it steeping in your throat, it's getting stuck there, it's processing, not ready to come out yet, it's going to get darker before it reaches her tongue. But then those words drown, and I realize that this is going to be darker of a poem than I was ready for. I like the way she italicized things, too. Do you want to be touched? And it's a question. And it's not something that she's actually saying out loud to the person. She's wondering, should I be comforting by touching? Because sometimes that's something that is comforting, and sometimes it's something that you jump away from, depending on how you're grieving. And then when she says, those words, too, are stillborn, I realize what kind of grieving we're talking about. Because as much as she's talking about the words being stillborn, when she says, too, we know that there's another stillborn happening. And the idea of loss being the highest form and the lowest form of love, because it's the most painful, but it also, in a way, honors the one who is lost, because when you're feeling lost so deeply, it reminds you of the potential that you had for love. And someone said, and I can't remember who, but I was reading it recently, that grief is just love that you have nowhere to put, because you've lost where it would go, or you've never had where it should go. So that is what I think about when I read that line. And then the part that really hit me too was when she's talking about the different kinds of crying. And also because when she says, I haven't cried in over a year, I know what happened last year. So just think about in the context of the poem what someone might be going through. And the idea of, like, sometimes you have those little tears that come out because, you know, you're ready to cry, and that's different. The way she describes guzzled the whole bottle, bubbles foaming up in the shoulders, mouth, and nose, and eyes, leaking from every orifice, that deep kind of crying where you feel like you're going to choke to death on the tears that are running down the back of your throat, and you are just like drowning in it coming out of every part of you, and you know, the salt is like choking. That is a deep, deep cry, and up into the shoulders where it's like your whole back is arched in like an uncontrollable cry. That's the kind of cry that you can only write about if you've really deeply felt it. And the way that she says the corners of my ache, being submerged in the corners of her ache, that she is in that sea of pain. And then, again, the italics punch us in the stomach. Another loss. It happened again. And the empty bottle can be different kinds of bottles. It can be the alcohol bottle as you drink to cope. It can be the baby bottle that never got filled up. It can be so many different things. Then the sandcastle part, again, had me really crying the first time because the water comes in and it takes away what you had built, and it's like there's nothing that was there, and there's no proof that it existed, and it's just gone, and no one will even notice that the sandcastle that you put so much into is gone. This is just intense and powerful and vulnerable. And that last line, I want to be drunk. Is it, I want to be drunk like I want to drink until I am drunk? Is it, I want to be drunk like I want someone to absorb me and understand me? And I just feel really overwhelmed by this poem. And I think Babbler is an amazing writer and an amazing person. And I love you, Babbler. Pam, over to you.
Oh, my goodness. That was such a beautiful comment. And I have to agree with you. I mean, this is just, it's powerful. It's emotive. It's hard-hitting. It is one that definitely brings tears to your eyes. And I like how, Babbler, I'm always impressed with her writing. And I like how this does speak to me on that idea of wanting that deep cleansing cry. But it also speaks strongly on loss and grief. I really like this all the way through, but especially loss is the highest form of love and the lowest, where the sky meets the sea, both neither, tears flow on command, a twist of the face easily pops the cork on pseudo heartbreak or pink champagne nostalgia, but I haven't guzzled the whole bottle. I also like the mention of Leith, leaking from every orifice until Leith submerges me in profoundly cerulean corners of my ache. And I like how she ties that back to the end with the idea of I want to be touched, I want to be drunk. Like she answers the question, like the question beginning, do you want to be touched? And the idea, I think, of wanting to be drunk is because I think, like, when she mentions drinking the whole champagne bottle, it is that idea of completely letting go and doing that ugly cry where you don't hold back. And so when she goes to the end of I Want to Be Drunk, it's that idea of wanting that, of needing that. Just brilliant lines all the way through. And, oh, my goodness, definitely hits hard. Very well done.
I'm glad I pre-read it so I could have my initial reaction yesterday. You don't have to have blubbering tonight.
Yeah, I wish I had pre-read it. Oh, my gosh. And it's so difficult because, you know, a lot of times, like, I read a poem like this and I do have tears in my eyes. And I have to start telling myself, keep it together, keep it together.
But if a poem has the ability to make you not keep it together, that's a compliment to the poem. So,
oh, absolutely.
It's okay.
Absolutely.
I'm going to put you to work now, Pam. Yours is out.
All right. All right. This is the reality of unfolded laundry. I'm taking deep breaths of corroded air and flame-engulfed visions. I feel stuck here in middle age, but is it middle age if I don't know when I'm going to die? And if I could grab a DeLorean, a mad scientist, and the prom date groove of Johnny B. Goode to break the barriers of sound and time, would I really want to know? Life is an imp with a nasty sense of humor and a penchant for indecent exposure. I worry that the legacy I'll leave behind will be nothing more than unfolded laundry and the musings of a woman in a midlife crisis, and not even an epic crisis of sexual awakening, no riding younger men in a reverse cowgirl frenzy of desire, no first-time experience of making love to a woman and unfolding fluid mysteries. There is no climbing mountains, no conquering spirit traveling to exotic lands, or at the very least to Canada. There is simply another year approaching with a body that aches more than it should and a mind that dances in the boxing ring between shadow and light. End poem.
Heck yeah, Pam. That dancing between shadow and light in the boxing ring, that's why you're here. Part sinner, part saint, baby.
yeah.
Right? That's how we roll here.
Exactly.
This is why you're our favorite guest on our show. I really like how you ask, if you don't know when you're going to die, what's considered middle age? I mean, that's so true. Middle age, I was very sickly for a long time, so I kind of thought I was past my middle age. I wasn't expecting a super long life, but now I'm pretty stable. So I've decided to have my midlife crisis now that I'm not dying. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna live. Oh no, what did I do? You know, delayed reaction. But I think that's cute, the question of it, because other people might think that it's too early, you know. Well, people are living longer and longer. There's lots of time before I have to have my midlife crisis. But I tend to be a little bit pessimistic about the length of things and, you know, be pleasantly surprised when you live longer. The idea of life having a penchant for indecent exposure made me laugh so much. I love that. That was cute. Where is it? The Unfolded Laundry, which I love as a title, and that you have here is extra funny because I am sitting on, like, a mound of unfolded laundry. I'm very good about getting my stuff clean. I'm not so good about putting it away.
I'm right there with you.
And I like that you talk about how your midlife crisis isn't even exciting. That idea of, like, you know, if you're going to have a midlife crisis, go hook up with some guys or a woman or go mountain climbing or travel. And when you say go to Canada, I mean, come on, come visit me. you could at least visit Aphasiana. We can check off other things on your list. While you're here, I'll help you.
yeah.
There are mountains here. We can at least do that. I really like that.
If I actually ever had a chance to visit you in Canada, I would love to go to, like, one of your, like, sword fighting Viking things that you do. That would be...
Oh, yeah. I could definitely,
awesome.
You know, connect you with a younger man at one of those, too.
There you go.
That would be an adventure, I promise. I have weird adventures, but I do have adventures. So, yes. We will take you sword fighting.
But yeah,
all right.
Thank you so much.
That was awesome.
For the comment and the inspiration.
Oh, thank you for bringing it, for being here, too. Our next... Oh! Babbler is here. Babbler,
oh, awesome.
Babbler. Any and all type of we blamed on 9 shots of whiskey.
That's impressive, 9 shots. I think that would have me knocked out. I wouldn't even be typing.
Same.
I'd just be like drooling on my Kindle Fire screen.
That's awesome. I'm waiting for her to see if she's calling in. She may be a little bit too much into the whiskey. But I hope she calls, and in the meantime, I am... Oh, yeah, good, she's calling. Okay. Babbler, Babbler, Babbler. I don't see her yet in the studio.
Well, after 9 shots of whiskey, she's probably calling the wrong number.
That is entirely possible. Let's post it for her. There she is.
Awesome. Very cool.
Babbler. Hello.
Hello.
I'm glad you made it.
Yeah,
Pam has been holding us together as I, like, you know, weep.
didn't mean to make you weep. Well, kind of, but not really.
Well, I mean, it was amazing, wonderful poem. But you know, I don't hold things together very well. So actually, I was proud of myself. I didn't blubber too much.
I'll take some of the money if you can send it this way.
All right, that's we'll share the ability to blubber. I also have too much blubber, so you know you can have some of that too.
same, but let's not talk about that.
All right, so our next poem is by Blue Harrison, and are you up for reading, Babbler?
Sure.
All right. It's on the board.
Right. This is Bleed Bite by Blue Harrison. Slow spun rage. Hunger spurned father to child, and all the while, the wheel on high turns. She eats, not of natural things, knowing mother will turn the page quick, hack, and drive. To some new instant life, the ripened fruit does skin my eyes and tie back my hands and leave in command all that is wetted upon bone. My love is ground zero, kindness with parted lips. He comes close, too close. Unable to breathe such ravenous air of woman pressed to his throat, pulse, pulse, plead. Bite. Paternal seed kicks in, and so she feeds, starting at throat, then delving neath skin, a natural sinking, a rolled eye and dancing tongue. Just another dining, handed down, new generation, no judgment, except her own self-seething. End poem.
Whoa, this was intense and an unexpected twist. Part of me sees it as like a vampire story. another part of me sees it as kind of an unhealthy relationship with sex based on some abuse that happened before and then now kind of being, I don't know how to say it, but doing some interesting things and passing along habits. I'm kind of liking the vampire route. It has the pagan, maybe Wiccan aspects with the Hecate and that command section there. Really interesting. Very different from all of our other responses to the prompt, and really cool to see a different side of things. Pam, what were your thoughts?
I really like Blue Harrison's writing. She's always got such thought-provoking and intelligent imagery and metaphors. You know, I like the vampire approach, and I wish I could hide upon that effect, you know, behind that. But I have to say that as you were making the other parts of your comment, you know, I felt like, you know, because I had thought the same thing, and you know, and it's always hard for me to talk about poems like this. First of all, because I hate being wrong, but there's something about this that speaks to me on sexual abuse. And maybe it's not there, maybe I'm reading into it, but, you know, all that is wed upon the bone, paternal seed kicks in, and so she feeds. You know, and even the idea of where she says she eats not of natural things, knowing mother will turn the page, quick pack and drive. It does speak to me. It does speak to me on sexual abuse, and I could be completely wrong. I would much prefer it to be a vampire, right, because I hate that stuff like that happens to people. You know, it's just a really difficult thing. But if nothing else, if it's not, it does speak, I think, on some kind of abuse. If nothing else, any emotional abuse. All the way through there's strong lines, unable to breathe, such ravenous air of woman pressed to his throat, pulse, bleed, bite. There's almost this idea of having become a stronger woman to the point where a man or a person who is the abuser, is the controller, can no longer be in the same room as your presence. And the ending line, just another line, just another dining handed down, new generation, no judgment, except for her own self-seething. So the generation that she grew up in where, you know, and I get the undertone of perhaps growing up in an extremely religious household, although I could be, again, could be wrong. It's an undertone. And the idea of how you've moved on, and yet there's still the after effects. There's still the fruit of guilt dined upon. So just an amazing write and very well done.
I think you're right, and I think that the vampire stories are easier to handle, but I do think that you're right that it is about the abuse, which is, it's well done in that way. I have trouble commenting on it sometimes because it's like to be like, yay, wonderful poem, when it is written wonderfully, but it's about something so dark that it's like I don't know how to comment.
Absolutely, so. I get that.
Babbler, what did you think?
Well, I really liked it. You know, I do think that vampirism is a metaphor for lust and sexual proclivities. But I guess I didn't take it so much as sexual abuse as perhaps a father who was committed infidelity, who like cheated repeatedly on a mother, you know, like a sexually ravenous father. Although it may be about abuse. That was my original interpretation of it, you know, and this mother who, when she feels, you know, who's opposed to that kind of thing, who doesn't think it's right or thinks it immoral, just packs up and leaves, you know. She eats not of natural things, knowing mother will turn the page quick, pack and drive. So knowing that you take after your father and that your mother hates your father. You know, so the instability that makes, you know, when your parents have this horrible and tumultuous relationship, not knowing how to cope with that, you know, not feeling stable when you know that you take after the, worse parent, I guess. I don't know how to phrase that. I guess I didn't view it so much as I possibly could be, you know, to then feel burned, you know, to not really have settled, to have like a loose grasp on reality, you know. And then when I get to the, my love is ground zero, kindness with parted lips, he comes too close, you know, not knowing how to love someone, because you never really felt loved, you know. You had a sexually promiscuous, perhaps abusive father, and a mother who every time things got hard just, you know, abandoned ship, you know, so like no real coping skills and no real knowledge of what real love feels like, what kindness feels like. And so when presented with this, you know, you just like feast on it ravenously. You become that sexual abuser, like it's just handed down generationally. And knowing that you're doing it, but not knowing how to stop. You know, I like to be just another dining handed down, you know, just another sexual ravenous, like, person, and judging yourself for it because that's the part you got from your mother. And yet new generation, no judgment, like people around you aren't judging you, but you're judging yourself, you know, the own self-seething. I really liked this piece, you know, the bleed and then the bite. You know, and particularly because that's how vampires are made, right? They you know, are bitten and then become vampires themselves. And I think it works well for, like, the generational aspect this takes on. You know, the handing down the trauma. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great write.
Excellent comment, Babbler. I have some great news. We have been joined by the Duke of St. Paul. Hi, Dex.
Hey, good to hear from all of you.
Too. Missed you.
Yeah, I missed you too. Yeah, this was... How have I been? I've been fantastic, actually. I've been hanging in there. I've been doing fantastic. Got some good news, but yeah, everything has been fantastic. We've been working two jobs though at the time too, also. So, but everything has been great. This is a fantastic write, and I took it a little bit towards the way that Babbler did too. I almost took it as somewhat too as something that was passed down from the parents. You know, sometimes some of that abuse in the character can definitely be something that is passed down, and even all the way down from just, you know, the quote unquote daddy issues. You know, somebody that just didn't show any affection towards the family, you know, can result in serious sexual deviance and wanting, you know, out of family members. So I thought that this was a fantastic write.
Fantastic comment. Babbler accidentally hung up, but I think she's back. Babbler, are you back? Awesome.
Okay.
I can hear you. Okay. Our next poem is by Stephen T. Wellman. And Dex, I believe you're a fan of Stephen's. Do you want to read that one?
Absolutely. This is by Stephen T. Wellman. This is called Vapor. I swallowed scorching sun, fire in my veins, ice in my chest, water wets windows, weary worlds weep, removes the scales from magmatic eyes, my soft soul rough around the edges, and my melting mystery solve me before I evaporate. End poem.
Great read and wonderful poem, Stephen. I like how it gets into different elements, the fire, the water, and then kind of the air, because you're thinking about evaporating. And so all of those go together with the vapor, and it's amazing how all of them can be ways that you are unsettled. So I like the combination of fire in my veins and ice in my chest. The, of course, alliteration of weary world weeps and enigmatic, I shouldn't have even tried to say, eyes. I also really like melting mystery. This is cool. The fire part, it makes me laugh a little bit because there was this woman at work yesterday who, I mean, she's unwell. She comes in all the time with interesting theories. But she has this thing about color. And I was wearing red. And she said, you know you're not supposed to wear that color. And I was like, oh. And she's like, that's how you get burnt. They'll burn you at the stake because they can tell you're a witch now because of the red. And I'm like, oh, yeah, sorry about that. And then she was like, you see how I wear green? And I'm like, yep. And she's like, well, that's because my plants will grow next summer thanks to me. And I'm like, okay, good for you. And then she was like, do you know why a doctor wears white? And I was like, to show they're clean. And she was like, to make you go bald. She's like, but that's okay, because Will Smith will slap them for me. Wow. Anyway.
Jesus Christ. Who the hell are you talking to? You should have kicked them away from the library. You should have called the police.
She was already on about how they were after. She's there all the time. I won't break confidentiality by saying the thing she was looking for, but let me say that they were even funnier. Anyway, the fire just reminded me of that. They'll burn you because of that red. Yeah. Sorry, that was off track.
No, it was on track. You should call the police.
No, for real, like, I have way worse things to call the police on every single day. you gotta learn to just run with it, or else they'd always be there. Pam, what did you think of Stephen's poem?
Oh, I really like this. It's a wonderful brevity. I always enjoy and appreciate Stephen's writing. You know, I like the metaphor of the ice. The comparison of the fire and ice, and the idea, like the main thought I got from this was wanting someone to understand the emotions that are held beneath that exterior of ice, that putting on that facade of being an emotionally hard person when underneath there's this like bubbling pool of emotions that want to come up. And it's a great write all the way through, but I did enjoy the alliteration, the imagery, and the lines in the second stanza. Water wets windows, weary world weeps, remove the scales from my enigmatic eyes. Just beautiful lines and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Babbler, what did you think?
I enjoyed this. You know, it's a pretty short piece, so I think it says quite a bit, you know. I love the title being Vapor, you know, and that relating to that kind of fleeting emotional feeling, which, you know, I relate to. You know, I swallow the scorching sun, fire in my veins, ice in my chest. So, like, even though you've swallowed the sun, there's still this frozen core, you know, this, like, bizarrely protective layer in the center. You know, even though water is wetting the windows as you, like, steam on the exterior and the world is upset, you know, these, you know, emotionless, cold, you know, and when I read, like, the scales from my enigmatic eyes, I definitely picture, like, a lizard, you know, and their exotherm, you know, all the heat is from the outside, so, like, the sun that they swallowed. And yet they still have a soft soul in the middle, but it's vaporizing, you know, it's evaporating. If you want to see how they really feel, if you want to know their real emotions, and you have to catch it. You, like, right, you have to unravel it in what's happening in this blink of an eye. You know, and as someone who doesn't cry a lot and isn't the best at, like, physically expressing my emotions, it's interesting because I'm much better at writing my emotions. But, like, if you were to actually see me in person and interact with me in person, you know, how I feel is not always readily apparent. You know, you'd have to know. So I relate to this piece. I think it's really well done, you know, to be aware of your own coldness, your own defenses, your inability to express the things that they feel, but that doesn't mean you don't feel them. And it doesn't even mean that you don't express them. It's just not typical. Like, it has to be translated. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great piece.
Well said. Dexter, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I like this quite a bit. The way I kind of interpreted this is, you know, you're kind of disappearing as you age without that, person, you know what I mean, without that that mate, without that soulmate finding you. I kind of feel like, you know, it's like you can try to keep yourself alive, but person that, you know, maybe way down the line as you're aging and being single, like, this person's not really getting the full glimpse of you. And I think that as a single person, it's like almost like you just start to dissipate and you just start to evaporate as over time. And, I am a melting mystery, you know. Nobody else knows this person, you know. So I thought it was a fantastic write.
That was insightful. I like that. Our next poem is by Kenny W. And Pam, I believe it's your turn to read if you're up for it.
I am, absolutely. Let me just jump back to where I need to be. And here we go. This is We Have No Control Over Our Lives by Kenny W. And, geez, been jumping this poem. Okay, there we go. Finally opened. All right. Looking back, you know I wanted to be an engine driver. Life would have been so much simpler. Climb into the cab each day, get everyone from A to Z, stopping along the way. I'd have a lovely engine driver's wife, live an uncomplicated life, maybe a couple of loyal kids who both admired what I did. Everything right and forever on track. Somewhere along the line, my signals all got crossed and I lost my innocence and went off the rails. And all I did was fall in conquering this life down here on earth. If it was really up to me, I'd ditch my life of responsibility, blowing my hopes and restless dreams and long forgotten schemes, vanishing into the wind of forgotten hopes, into a life more meaningful where all my friends and family pull in the same direction in love and affection forever for the good. Would so be it, would it ever be so. But I'm well past middle age and now can only rage at the hand that was dealt out for me, the lack of chances to be free. There ain't ever, never no going back. Looking ahead now down the track, it's still courage that I lack to run this train from the rails, admitting I have failed to find my true station in this life and poem.
I think this is really powerful. I liked that the end, it's talking about not having the courage to run their own train. So it's not so much about, you know, as much as it's talking about wanting to be the conductor and what it would be like to be the conductor of the train, it's more about being the conductor of your own life, of being able to make your own decisions and go down those paths, whereas all I did was fall, went off the rails. There was no actual steering happening early in their life, and now that they've messed up so much, they're scared to try to drive because what would happen if they fall again, and what would happen if they admitted that they were trying and they still couldn't stay on the track. I think that's a really powerful statement and a good extended metaphor throughout the piece. Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought that this was a fantastic, right? You know, so many of these quotes and, you know, motivational quotes and all of these things are for people that have a certain confidence. But what happens when that confidence is broken? What happens, you know, when that realization comes and that that you failed or that you blew it or that you, you know, that you just can't do that. You know, those are the holes that are hard to climb out of. It's hard to climb out of the thought that I blew it or that I can't. And so I just thought that this one was very emotional, and I thought it was very well done.
It is. It definitely is. An emotional piece, that idea of not feeling like there is a way out of your rut, that you can't get back on track. It's really a tough thing, and I hope that they find a way back on track, but it's true, you know, there's a place of privilege where we think of it as a doable thing when sometimes there's not always the resources and the help that people need to be able to get there. Babbler, what were your thoughts?
Well, I really like this write. I feel like it takes a bit of a switch in the middle. You know, obviously the being a conductor, maybe literal, but much more metaphorical, you know, and having all these grand plans for your life and how simple it's going to be. It's like, I'm going to get a wife and I'm going to have a couple of great, loyal kids who really look up to me and everything's going to be gravy. Newsflash, like, nobody's life works like that. If your life managed to work like that, like, congratulations. That is incredibly rare. You know, it's not that easy to live an uncomplicated life. Life is just kind of complicated, you know. So to view that as a failure, you know, to view that as your life going off the rails and all you did was fail, you know, it's kind of sad, but I also understand. I think that's just a phase of life. I think everyone kind of goes through that where, you know, usually like at the end of teenhood and into early adulthood when you're like, this is what I'm going to do. And then you leave your parents' house and you start doing stuff on your own and you quickly realize like, oh, that ain't how any of this shit works. you go through this phase of like, am I failing? But then you realize all the people around you are experiencing the same thing. It's like, no, that's just a fledgling human's experience. And then to get later in here, you know, where it says they're past middle age now, and the line especially where it says, looking ahead now down the track, it's still courage that I lack to run this train from the rails. Meaning, no, my life has always kind of been on the rails, but the problem is the destination's not great. I'm on a track, but I'm not going where I thought I was going to go. And so what I've really not had the ability to do is change the course of my life. It's that throwing it off the rails is what I actually haven't done. Things didn't go to my plan, but they went in a certain direction, and I don't like that. And that's the part where I've really failed, is really like getting my shit together and directing my own life, which is what I haven't done the whole time. So kind of like that change in tone where it becomes less of you being like a passive person in your own life and your own decision-making, where it's like, things just fell apart and I failed at everything, and to know I've been going this whole time, like the life and the world didn't stop for me. But what I've not managed to do is take the reins on my own choices. So I really liked this piece. I thought it was really well done. I thought it was a great extended metaphor. I think it said quite a few things, and I do enjoy that change in tone. So, well done.
Okay. I really love your interpretation, and it fits the best with what is happening in the book and the TV show that the prompts are from. That actually works so well with Libby, the narrator's perspective on things. So I'm going to go with your interpretation of this battler, because that fit perfect. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like what everybody had to say. And, I thought this was a great write about looking back at your life choices and about realizing the things that you have control over and you don't have control over. I like that right away he starts us with the idea, the dream of youth, of wanting to be an engine driver, and continues to use that throughout the poem, almost like an extended metaphor. Just great lines all the way through. I did like those last couple of stanzas, especially the last lines, to run this train to the rails, admitting I have failed to find my true station in this life. The idea that you put aside your own dreams and, you know, you can really, it does kind of feel like that whole idea of almost like having no one to blame but yourself for not being willing to try. So excellent write and very well done.
Great comments, everyone. Well, it looks like we have 15 minutes left, and that was the end of that contest. So, Babbler, do you want to dig into your blue contest a little bit?
Yeah, we can. So I'll go ahead and introduce it, but it's really pretty basic. The contest is the next one in my rainbow series, this one being blue. So I threw up some inspiration for the color blue, which you could take or leave. All that was really required is that your poem was inspired by the color. So I'll read the quotes that I gave as inspiration in case anyone chose them to help their prompt make a little bit more sense. So the first one is, "How sweet to be a cloud floating in the blue," by A.A. Milne. The next one was, "A cloudless plain blue sky is like a flowerless garden." And then the next one is, "I want to die with my blue jeans on," by Andy Warhol. And the last quote I gave was, "Navy never looks like it's trying too hard. It's understated cool." So those were the quotes that were given. But really, anything that sparked your interest that's based on the color blue, prompt
Sounds good. Will you read the first poem, too, by Jay Azir?
Absolutely. This is Blue by Jay Azir. Inscribed in, into, again, with my lead, it's about you, my deep blue, well-loved and truly loved, a true ivy. Okay, you'll be okay. You will become and true but sure, like tomorrow, you'll shine. Like the being of years to years, your beautiful, sure self will echo with you, and you'll reach for the hearts, and with your smiles, will be with you, with me, stars of the unknown, but with you, it will all be known.
Excellent read, Babbler. Dexter, will you start the comments for us?
Yeah, this is a pretty incredible, right? The deep blue, well loved and truly loved, true ivy. You know, to me, this kind of reminds me of a star and how it echoes down kind of through time and how it's supposed to be burnt out. There's that kind of bluish hue around the stars of the unknown, but with you, it'll all be known. It's just kind of it seems like that story of a star glistening from a distant galaxy. So I thought it was a fantastic piece.
I'm really glad that you pointed that out. That ending was my favorite too, stars of the unknown, but with you, it'll all be known. And when it says, like tomorrow, you'll shine, and there is that feel of, you know, even after you're gone, you still shine. You're still part of the world through the people who see you and through your influence on things. I thought that was beautiful. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is a beautiful write. I do like how it's about being that kind of person who spreads a light to other people. And as you were and Dexter were mentioning, that idea of that light being remembered even after death. I particularly like the being of years to years, your beautiful sure self will echo with you and you'll reach for the hearts. So it's not about keeping that light to yourself, but rather of sharing it. So excellent write and very well done.
And Babbler, you read it for us. Can you also comment?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was an interesting take on the color blue. You know, it's like my deep blue. You know, it's like a deep color. It's like one of the longest wavelengths that we can see. You know, it's why the sky is blue. It's why the ocean is blue. So I don't know. For me, it's like the depth of that is well done, you know. And then, of course, true blue is kind of played on here in a few different places, like with a true ivy. I feel like true is a substitute for blue. And there's kind of like this switch off between the true and blue, like almost like a hint at authenticity, which I really enjoyed, especially when it comes to like the being of years to years. Your beautiful, sure self will echo with you. You know, again, to blue being like the true, being authentic, a really yourself. And I feel like there's that wordplay again with you'll reach for the hearts, where heart is substituted for stars, because we've already kind of talked about stars. But this isn't so much about going out as it is about going in, you know, and touching people and finding the center of people and the way that you affect others in your life. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was there was some really good wordplay in here, and just, you know, this certain kind of love that's, you know, it could be a friendship, it could be a close family member or a child. I feel like it's really beautifully done, you know, just, and it's about authenticity and like real deep seated love. I really liked it. I thought it was well done.
Great comment. I think we have time for one more. So there's one called The Blue Hat, Duke of St. Paul. Could you read that for us?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
This is called The Blue Hat by Ronway. The canon of my words. The blue fedora, book of poetry, recited in the mirror wearing me. Made in words, read and read again. Some poems from my garret days. The romantic poet scribbling. Blue hat, blue fedora for the stage. It knows the part it plays by adding to its mystery of writing all the words. While dipped below that one eye, I lived with it in my garret days, never knowing who was in control. The hat says it danced with piff, piff. Stole poetry from Shakespeare's shop. Said so long to Cohen, having caught him. How to write. Ran with a little cough on Rosselli's sands. Now it's disappointed because it stuck with me. The blue fedora knows that it's famous. It once again in vogue, worn by Kronik, but it can't remember being on the road. I have to let it wear me as it loves to perform by hiding me on stage. End poem.
Thank you, Dex. I thought this was really fun in the references of who has worn such a hat and how there are so many different kind of personalities of famous people who have made hats iconic. The Shakespeare, Cohen, Rosselli, and then Kerouac. I thought it was really funny that it couldn't remember being on the road. Like the good use of the title to make that there, and how the hat doesn't make the connections, and yet it's not that the person wears the hat. I have to let it wear me. Because it's not just an accessory making the writer or the presenter feel cool. It is part of the being of being in the performance. The hat is hiding the somewhat shy performer, but also you're bringing the hat to life and giving it a new reason to be famous. I think it's really cool. Babbler, what did you think?
I enjoyed this. I took the blue fedora as like a persona. You know, sometimes when you're acting, if you get stage fright or you're performing, it's good to like take on a character that is yourself. To be that actor, so that it's like it's not you acting, it's this version of you, like a persona. And that's how I took this fedora. You know, the blue hat is his persona for performance, his persona for writing. You know, it's okay that the words seem, you know, kind of cheesy. It's okay if they're overly romantic, you know, if they're grandiose, because it's not him, it's the hat. You know, so he could put this hat on, his writing hat, the blue fedora, and become, you know, inspired by Piaf or Shakespeare or Cohen. You know, he can think about these silly characters like Little Cough, which I believe is a brand of cough medicine you know, and the Rosili Sands are like in Wales. You know, it's this fantasy version of self that, you know, lives within this hat that empowers him to say things and write things and be inspired by things that otherwise he wouldn't have the courage to do. You know, the blue fedora knows that it's famous. You know, it was in vogue. It was worn by Kerouac. You know, like, it has all of these credentials that make it valid, you know, and it wears me, you know, and loves performing on the stage. But is a version of self, you know. Actually, it is the person wearing it, doing all of these things. It's just a vehicle for courage. So I really enjoyed this ride. I thought it was a great take on having a stage persona.
I think you explained that very well. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is a clever ride all the way through, and I do like how the hat represents that persona, as Babbler was saying, and the idea of having something to hide behind. I too, really liked the reference to Jack Kerouac's On the Road. That part definitely made me smile. Also, I really liked the romantic poet scribbling for his blue hat, a blue fedora for the stage. It knows the part it plays by adding to its mystery. You know, the idea that of being the a different person when you're on stage wearing that hat. So, excellent write and very well done.
All right, Dex, can you finish us up with your comment?
Yeah, I thought it was a fantastic piece. You know, I agree with what everybody had said, and you know, it was a important piece because of just really you know, signifying about the poet. And it really, I thought it was important because, you know, I thought he did a very well job because of how well versed that he is in poetry. So I thought it was a great write.
I agree. Well, we only have 1 minute left, so I'm just going to say thank you so much to Pam for filling in tonight as co-host, and then for Babbler for joining us even after the party. And Dexter, so great to hear you again. Thank you for calling. And we are out of time, but thank you to everyone who wrote. And Babbler has 2 contests open, so go check out Babbler's contest to be on the show next week.
Thank you.